Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Spite Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Add color to your home's exterior with LED outdoor string lights. They're perfect for holidays or get-togethers, and they can be scheduled to automatically turn on or off. View our entire selection of Fight Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumors Show. Hartley, good afternoon. How are you feeling, man? Are you feeling okay? Feeling a little better?
I'm okay. It's been a long week.
Yeah. But you sound good. A little bit lower than normal, which I'm sure we'll have many comments of. Just there's always
I use a voice changer. You know, maybe I just couldn't get my original settings back. Whatever they say,
there's always you can always tell when somebody just stumbled upon our show for the first time because they're like, I did not expect the voice to come out of that person, and it's like, okay. All right. So with that said, did any of the M5 devices being officially available cheer you up? Maybe throughout the week.
I wouldn't say cheered me up, but it's nice to have them out there, I guess. It builds my enthusiasm a little bit more for the devices that are still to come. I'm not a customer really for any of these three devices that have come out. I'm most interested in the Vision Pro, but realistically, I probably won't do much more than try one out for a while. So I'm more interested to see where this goes with the M5 Pro, M5 Max. And even when we start to get these chips in devices like the MacBook Air, plenty of people have been saying to me about how they're now holding off on purchases of an M4 MacBook Air because they want that better chip, and that's on the horizon now.
Yeah, I would absolutely wait if you're going to buy anything. I think someone last week was like, I'm about to buy an M4 MacBook Pro. Should I do that? And I'm like, no, just wait. And then like the next day, the M5 got announced. So hopefully that person took my advice. I've had them for the last few days. I've really only used the iPad Pro and the MacBook Pro so far. And really, it was just the iPad Pro for the most part. The rest, I just kind of unboxed and got set up. And I mean, I ran some benchmarks. They certainly seem faster in terms of what the scores are outputting. But like, am I going to notice that on a regular basis? Probably not. I mean, even if like I export a video or render out some, you know, effects that are pretty intense, like the M4 handled it pretty well. I can't imagine I'm going to be like, you know, this seemed a lot faster this time around. Like, I just don't know that I'm going to notice that. So nothing really to report in terms of anything else. It just feels like the same device, which is fine. We have to remind ourselves this isn't for us. This is for those who need to upgrade because you're running off an M1, or maybe you've got an old MacBook Air that you just want a little bit more out of, or I don't know. It's just not for me and you. That's all.
Pretty much. It's just for those people that are in the market for something new right now. Vision Pro is definitely the most interesting one because there is a little bit more to it. And ostensibly, all the reviews that we've seen this week about the reaction to the new dual knit headband has been really positive. And that does seem to have quite dramatically changed the experience. Also, I don't know if you've seen any of these videos of side-by-side comparisons of how much faster the M5 Vision Pro is compared to the M2. With things like how fast widgets load in or opening apps. And it does seem to be really quite dramatic. So if you are a Vision Pro power user, I imagine you'll be really happy with this update.
Yep, that's next on my list, and I'm excited to get into that. But the other two were a little bit easier to set up and get going, so I figured that's where we'll start. The rest of this, though, this episode's a little depressing because one of my new all-time favorite iPhones that I do not use on a regular basis but really love might be getting the axe already, and this makes me sad. The iPhone Air is potentially on the chopping block. I mean, it is for in terms of production for this year, at least. They're going to start. There's been reports of Apple starting to reduce production by what, as high as 80% for basically most of the supplies and even some of the components that might need longer lead times to make. I think they're just discontinuing at the end of the year altogether. This makes me very upset because I really do like the iPhone Air. And the only reason why I do not use it all the time is because of the battery. Or I'm sorry, that's not true. let me rephrase that, is because of the lack of cameras. The battery, I was going to follow up with immediately, is that the battery is really not that bad for me. I like it. It's fine. It gets me through and I can do what I need to do and still have battery left over. It has not been an issue for me. It's really just I use a telephoto lens quite a bit. And when I need to punch in for things and I'm too far away, I can't do it. And that's kind of a bummer. But otherwise, the rest of the phone is great. I know some people complain about the one speaker. And I think you'd be on that list too. You've already done it without having the phone. I think you'd be on the list if you were an actual like user of the phone on a daily basis. But for me, I just watch videos and yeah, I got to turn it up a little louder than normal, but like it gets the job done. I don't listen to music or podcasts through my phone. I usually have AirPods with me. So yeah, I mean, I can get through it. But how do you feel about the iPhone Air potentially being on the chopping block for, are they even going to get to a second generation?
I think they will get to a second generation, especially considering that these things are pretty much locked in about a year to 2 years in advance. So realistically, the iPhone Air 2 would already have been a pretty complete picture before the first one even launched. That's why there were two mini iPhones, even though the first one sold terribly. There were two plus iPhones in recent years, even though the first one sold terribly. So realistically, there will be two Air iPhones. Where it gets more interesting is what happens after that, because we have heard rumors that Apple was planning to debut a larger screen iPhone Air with the third and fourth generation. Whether that still happens or not, I think is now an open question, because that is far enough away that Apple could step back from it. But maybe it doesn't want to. Maybe it's still selling in acceptable numbers to justify having this kind of third option in the lineup available. And ostensibly, it hasn't done that badly, which is a hard sort of, it's a complicated issue to kind of process, because the iPhone Air really has defied expectations in a lot of regards. It's extremely durable. The battery life seems to be fantastic. And in general, people who buy this device do seem to be very happy with it. I have a few friends who bought one who are, I wouldn't necessarily say are deeply engaged in the tech community, but they love it. And they appreciate having something that steps back from, the sort of the ever heavier and ever thicker nature of the successive generations of iPhones in recent years. It sold out within minutes in China very recently when it went on sale. But at the same time, they're kind of just lingering on shelves, at least in Western markets and at least now in China. And I don't know if you noticed this back when pre-orders opened, but it was the only iPhone model that was readily available on launch day. Everything else was backed up for weeks, but the iPhone Air in general was the most available model.
Hey guys, I want to let you know this episode of the Mac Rumor Show is sponsored by Claude. You know, one of the coolest parts of my workflow lately has been experimenting with Claude. I've been using it to plan out projects, research across multiple sources, and even think through problems in ways I wouldn't have on my own. It's not just spitting out answers, it's actually helping me organize my thoughts and get solutions faster. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at just good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether I'm sketching out a video script or working through a complex production timeline, it just feels like I've got a partner who's always on the same page. One thing that it's been is a huge time saver. Claude's ability to connect with my tools just makes it so much easier. I mean, I can pull stuff from Google Workspace, Notion, even my calendar, and it gives me the context that I need all in one place. There's no more jumping between apps or tabs. And honestly, the research capability is just next level. I'll ask it to break down something technical, and it not only finds the info, but connects the dots across dozens of sources that I'd never even think to check. It's like having a second brain for the work that matters most. If you're ready to tackle bigger problems, sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link. That's claude.ai/Mac. That's claude.ai/Mac, M-A-C, right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro, which includes access to all of the features mentioned in this episode. claude.ai/Mac. Thanks, Claude, for sponsoring this episode. So yeah, I noticed that. I think we went through this. The one phone of the iPhone Air model that wasn't available was the Cloud White in, I think, almost all of the configurations. So that was the only one, weirdly, but everything else was pretty much available. Some of them had like a week delayed ship times, but you can get them in stores. So yeah, that, and I also, to go back off your point of the China launch thing, I've heard that they are selling really, really well out there, which is interesting. So maybe that form factor is just better for different regions of the world. I don't know. I don't know. I really like it. I think this is by far the best option out of the other three, or well, I guess two that have failed. And, you know, out of the three, I think this is the best option. The Mini would have been fantastic. I think it would have sold really well had it been a Pro. Like if it had the same level of, you know, stuff that you get in the Air now, but it was a Mini, like could you imagine having promotion on it and maybe you have, you know, the two cameras and they were good cameras. I don't know. I just feel like if, and it was the same build quality, titanium, like I feel like that might have done well. We've always talked about this Pro, you know, Mini iPhone and whether it would sell. I don't think we'll ever know, but I don't know. It really bums me out because I really do enjoy this phone a lot. I don't know. I guess I could probably get through without having the cameras because really it's just the weekends when we're out doing stuff with the family that I'm taking pictures. Throughout the week, I'm not really doing that. I do use my iPhone to film quite regularly because, you know, if I need shots that are just hard to get with a big camera, like I can do a really good job with using the iPhone in cinematic mode or just the standard 24 frames per second, 4K, even ProRes RAW. Like that's the stuff that I don't get on the Air, and that would be kind of a bummer for a work perspective. But like from daily use, I guess I don't use the cameras that much throughout the week. It's mostly just the weekends. It's the cameras and the price point, in my opinion. I made a video on this yesterday and I said the price point's the biggest thing that kills you. You have a $799 iPhone 17, and by all accounts, it's a fantastic phone. It's got everything that the Air has and more. It doesn't have the titanium frame, but who cares? No one cares about that. It's not like it's made out of plastic, the 17. It's aluminum. It's fine. The Pro phones have aluminum. So it's like you're getting more for less money, and now you're expecting people to pay $200 more when, oh, by the way, just $100 more after that gets you the Pro phones. It really is just the perfect phone to upsell you to the other things or maybe make you look at getting a 17 instead.
And that's really the issue here. And it's where, in particular, the Plus also struggled, is this territory between the standard iPhone and the entry-level Pro. And it doesn't seem like that gap is as big as Apple has wanted it to be. And it seems that most customers do fall into two camps. Either they just want a good, up-to-date iPhone with a good camera, decent specs that will get the job done, or they want the best iPhone. And the idea of something that lives in the middle does not seem to appeal to a significant number of customers. So the iPhone Air has sold better than the Plus models. And in that sense, it is a success. And also, it is, of course, rumored to be the basis of the foldable iPhone, where Apple has miniaturized all of this technology and is developing these skills that it will be able to deploy next year, and that this is kind of a test run to achieve that. But I don't know. I do worry for the long term here because I don't think it's a sufficiently attractive proposition. I can totally see how people in the tech community love this device because of what it represents, because it is an engineering marvel, the way that everything has been moved up to the plateau at the back, the way that the durability has not suffered, the battery life has not suffered, and this device really does offer so much. But the average person is still going to look at it in an Apple store and think, why would I buy that instead of a Pro? And yes, there are all of these debates about maybe the in-store experience will sell it, but people are weird. The kind of things that people care about are just, is it the best one though? And at the end of the day, it's not. And that is something that I think a lot of people are not willing to countenance, even with things like the new Pro iPhones are a pretty aggressive design. I mean, I think they're pretty ugly. I've got one, but I don't think it's a very good looking phone.
It's ugly? Oh, man.
And even the Cosmic Orange is very bold. It's very out there.
Watch it.
And what I would say about that is that if you go into an Apple store and you see this big orange phone that you are told is the best thing that is available, and then you have this thin, you know, pastel colored titanium thing that is a bit cheaper, and it's not quite as good, a lot of people think, no, I want the exciting new orange phone. It's just not been enough to draw enough people away.
Okay, so here's the thing. I made a video on this yesterday, this exact topic, right? And this is pretty fast. We have almost 500 comments on this video already. And that's kind of unusual for that quickly. Like, it's only been 12 hours since it's been out. And all of the comments that I'm looking through right now are people that apparently these are the only people that have ever bought the iPhone Air if the demand is that low. Everyone seems to love theirs. I bought the Air. I love it. I really hope Apple continues it. I bought the Mini phone and I love that as well. So there's a little tie-in to the Mini. I love the Air, but I missed the telephoto, so I swapped to a Pro and gave my wife the Air, and she was a 13 Mini user, and it was similar weight. So this is just all the people that loved the iPhone, 12 or 13 Mini are now just finding a second love in the, which is much larger, but if it's still the same weight, that's probably a pretty big, you know, option for them and a reason why they would go for it. The iPhone Air is amazing, and I loved having it moved from my 14 Pro Max, so there's that. I mean, every single comment, sad, I have one and I absolutely love it. One person just wrote, it's the price, which, I mean, not wrong. So I don't know. I feel like I need to know, because there's reports. What did the report say? What was the exact quote? Virtually no demand. Come on. No demand at all. Also, just real quick, I know it's slightly off topic, but to piggyback off of what I said last week about the Vision Pro and how I still go into stores and see people trying them on, I am still sticking with that because I know what I've seen. But when I went to the store this past week to pick up some things, someone saw a Vision Pro being purchased and one of the Apple store's employees said something and the other one laughed and said, it's like seeing a unicorn. And so then I had to ask, what do you mean? Do you not see these sell often? And they said, literally never. Now, this is just a small store in Ohio. So like I don't imagine there's a lot of people buying Vision Pros up here, but they literally said, I have never seen one sold since launch day. So that's pretty rough. So I wonder now, I'm going to go in with the Air and I'm going to talk about that and be like, have you seen people buy this phone? It's like a milk carton. Have you seen this phone? Does anyone buy it? I've never seen one out in the wild besides the one that I have, but it's still early.
So I think the key thing to understand here is that it may not be that the device has totally failed. Probably more likely that the device has, Apple just massively overestimated the demand. That is why there were so many available around pre-orders and launch. And that is why Apple is scaling back production. Now, just because it's cutting production, supposedly it's cutting it to quote unquote near end of production levels. And that another report has said that that's about 80%. Mm-hmm. Some components are being completely discontinued because they've already made so many of them that they just don't need more to meet the iPhone Air's demand. But that doesn't mean that there is no demand at all. So if we think about something like the iPhone Mini or iPhone Plus, those accounted for about 5% of iPhone sales is what we believe, which is not very many. So only one out of every 20 customers walking into an Apple store would buy a Mini or a Plus. Now, the iPhone Air, if it's doing better than the Plus, maybe it's around 10% of sales. So that may be enough to justify it. And Apple may have just significantly overestimated quite how many they would sell. It's hard to say. And at least for the past four generations, Apple has seen it justified to have a third option available. So maybe that will continue. Certainly, I imagine it will this year. I imagine it's already too far gone. They've already put all the engineering resources into this phone, and a new version of it coming this year probably will just contain a new chip and virtually no other changes. So that isn't a massive commitment for them to be able to offer another one. But I think that looking further to the future, where we're expecting a foldable iPhone, we are expecting the entry-level iPhone to move its launch date to earlier in the year. How much space is there for a foldable iPhone in that lineup that is increasingly crowded, I think is a bit of an open question. What I would like to see happen is that this becomes the new entry-level iPhone in the long term, that all of this engineering can come down in price and kind of replace the iPhone, I don't know, 20, 21, by then that is effectively an iPhone Air.
It does
come down to price.
How do you feel if Apple was able to figure out a way to basically, let's just throw out the engineering aspect for 1 second? I know that they would probably need titanium in order to make it as durable as it is. Or let's just say they were able to find cheap titanium, okay? And they could make the same frame for the durability, but then everything else was the same components as a iPhone 16e. Everything else is the same. The frame's the only thing that's a little bit more premium because they need it to do that, but everything else is the same. Display, maybe you get a dynamic island, but it's like the 14 Pro display or whenever the dynamic island came in. So it's that like level, and they charged $599 for it. Do you think that would survive and do well?
I'm not sure. I think that the issue here is just that the gap there is too small. So,
like, no, I mean, basically would replace the 16E, basically.
And I imagine that would be popular, but the 16E is kind of targeting a different market.
Yeah.
And I think that when we look at how big that gap actually is, so the iPhone 17 starts at $799, mm-hmm. and the iPhone 17 Pro starts at $1099, I believe. So that leaves a gap of $300. So any iPhone that is in that range hasn't got very, very much room, because let's say you sail right down the middle there and you have $150 either side. That is a lot of conflict there. A lot of people are not going to think, ah, it's worth me spending the extra $150, but not $300. And a lot of people who are already spending $1099 are not going to think, oh, I'll just spend $150 less. It's a very specific problem. And if we go back to before there was this kind of third iPhone, let's go back to the iPhone XS or the iPhone 11 lineup. The iPhone 11 lineup's a pretty good example, where you had the iPhone 11, the iPhone 11 Pro, and 11 Pro Max. That price gap of about, I still think it was about $300. Of course, you just fall into two easy camps there. You want an iPhone. Are you willing to spend an extra $300 to get the latest and greatest? Mm-hmm. Yes or no? It's a pretty easy decision. But for as long as you kind of overstuff the iPhone lineup, there are always going to be these models that fall between the cracks. It's different with the iPhone 16e, because that is just for that person that just needs the most basic iPhone. They want a decent camera. They want it to be pretty fast, but they don't know what a dynamic island is, and they don't care. They just want an iPhone with a good camera that could make phone calls and, read some emails. But for the average user, the average buyer, the iPhone 17 is such a good offer. Why would you buy the iPhone Air unless you were specifically bothered by the weight of these devices and the thickness? And those people are out there. I actually really don't like the weight of my iPhone 17 Pro. But do I dislike the weight enough compared to the cameras and the battery life and the stereo speakers and everything else that this device offers? Do I dislike it that much to drop down? Absolutely not.
Are you?
And I'm that weird kind of obsessive customer that's likely to make that kind of buying decision. And even I'm not making that.
I think we just need a show one day. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get people that email me, but I have to break this news to you. If you listen to this show, you do not fall in this category, but we need to find like 20 people who do not care about any of this and just bring them on and ask them questions so that we can finally get like a consensus of how the average person thinks when they're buying this stuff. I think that would be so incredibly interesting because we make assumptions and then people will come and be like, you don't know anything about the average person. But I'm also thinking to myself, I would say most average people don't comment on YouTube videos or podcasts about tech stuff. They just don't. If you're watching this, you have slightly above average to very highly above average interest in tech. And that's not, to me, the average person who goes out and buys an iPhone. I feel like people that I, you know, am friends with, my wife, like those people fall into the category where, you know, just my neighbor the other day was asking me about the phone because he was upgrading from an 11. Like it's been so long, and he gets the, you know, the new one, and he's like, yeah, it feels different, but like couldn't pinpoint a single thing that was like drastically that different. And I'm like, man, you're getting a lot of new stuff coming from an 11 to a 17 Pro. Like, I mean, there's a lot of new stuff in here, and none of it was at the top of his mind. So like, that's the type of people that we need to talk to about this, because I don't know, I just feel like it offers a much better perspective on where Apple, you know, I'm surely they do research for this. Also, Samsung's canceling their S25 Edge or the 26 Edge. So do they not work 2 years in advance, or are they just biting the bullet on all the research and development and production that they've done and are just like, screw it, it's not worth it?
So my understanding of Samsung's situation is that Samsung's attempt has sold worse. and because sales have been so low, yeah, they fully developed the S26 Edge and have just decided to not proceed with it. So it was fully developed. It just had not entered mass production. And it was ready to enter mass production, but they just decided to shelve it and instead come up with another Plus model, which, of course, just like Apple, the Air is intended to replace, or in this instance, the Edge is intended to replace. So
I'd be curious to see what
it's not worked out too well for Samsung.
I'd be curious to see how well those models sell, because they've got the S25, the S25 Plus, the S25 Edge, and the S25 Ultra. I'm guessing the Ultra is probably by far the best seller, and then maybe the 25 is probably the next one. Is it very similar to Apple?
I imagine so, because I guess we could look this up, but it's the same case. And this is the issue that any company faces when trying to segment its product offering. You see this plenty of times with automakers, with other companies that offer electronics. Is if we go back 10 years, I guess it would have to be more than that now. Let's go back maybe to the time of like the iPhone 5. All there was the iPhone 5, and you could buy an iPhone 4S if they were still on sale right at that time. But if you wanted a new iPhone, you could just buy an iPhone 5. You could choose between a black one and a white one, and I think like two different storage options. And I know it was a simpler time, and smartphones were a little bit less ubiquitous then, and Apple was a pretty different company back then. But things were simple because that's all there was. And over the years, Apple has expanded the lineup. So we first had things like the iPhone 5C alongside the iPhone 5S. Then we had the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. And the Plus models continued for years. And then Apple added the iPhone 10 and then the 10S and then the 10R. And then that became the entry-level models. And then we've had the Minis and the Pluses. And the lineup has got slowly bigger. And that's all well and good when you're trying to keep different groups of people happy. You know, when Apple did introduce the Mini, it said that it had recognized that there was a base of customers that had felt dissatisfied, and it was making that device for them. But the issue at the end of the day is that there will always be some groups of customers that are smaller than others. Apple could start shipping iPhones specially for kids. It could start shipping iPhones that have even bigger screens and push past 7 inches. It could start offering mini iPhones and mini Pro iPhones as well. It could start offering foldables in book styles and clamshell styles like Samsung. It could offer iPhones with plastic casings or even more premium options like iPhone Edition with some, you know, gold chassis. But the more you do that, inevitably, the market for some of these different devices will shrink. And maybe Apple is just learning that there isn't enough space to be able to offer this many things. And I want to caveat that by saying maybe the iPhone Air does sell just well enough to still justify itself. And maybe we'll now have 4 or 5 years of iPhone Airs on tables in Apple stores. But right now, based on these headlines we're getting, it doesn't look too good. And I think we should also say that these are not isolated reports. These are coming from surveys and from analysis from investment banks on different continents. Mm-hmm. These are independently sourced. This isn't like some random person on Twitter has said that the iPhone Air isn't selling well and the whole tech community has run with that. These are coming from pretty established sources. So we have to believe that. And I think that, just like you say, I've not seen these really out in the wild. And they were the only ones that were really available around pre-order readily on launch day. So that kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah. I'm just sad. I don't want it to go away that quickly. And I don't want next year's to just be a spec bump, you know, and then there's no innovation on top of it because it's basically being left for dead. But real quick, do you want to know the numbers for the Galaxy S25 lineup sales?
Sure.
So which one do you think sold the most first off?
The Ultra.
Yes. Okay. So basically how we laid it out is correct. So 10 million units, just about a little under 10 million units as of August for the Ultra. 6 million units for the S25 regular. The Plus was around almost 4 million units. Would you like to guess how much the Edge had?
I actually couldn't guess.
650,000. Not great. But also, technically, it was out a shorter amount of time, too, though. So it's not terrible, because the S25 Edge did come out in May, and I believe the other ones were in end of January. So, I mean, there were a few months, so it's not that bad. If you look at it in comparison, I guess maybe they'd hit a million if they had a couple more months like the other phones did, but still not great. But that's still a million people is a lot.
It is a lot of people, and a lot of people do enjoy these devices. By all means, as I keep saying, I think the iPhone Air is a great device. It just may not be enough to move the needle. And I think The last thing I will say about this is that I almost think it doesn't matter, because Apple can scale back production. It doesn't really lose any money on any of this stuff. And it also has provided this test ground to develop a thinner chassis for a foldable. And when we look at where the iPhone lineup is going, we had another rumor this week that was pretty interesting, that projects right through the next three generations of iPhone. And it looks like what Apple is going to do is, we know it's debuting a foldable next year. The year after is going to debut this complete redesign that will have the display waterfalling over all sides of the device. So something radically different.
Hate it. Absolutely hate it. Go ahead.
I think you might quite like it when you get it.
No. I can't. Waterfall displays are terrible. How am I supposed to hold the damn thing without unless Apple has some innovation behind accidental screen presses?
Well, I think Apple
presses.
Will find a way around that. But
I sure hope so.
The idea of the iPhone's design fundamentally changing again for the first time since the iPhone 10, I think is pretty exciting.
You're right. I'm going to be all about it when it comes out. Don't worry.
Yeah. that will be 2027, and then which is the 20th anniversary iPhone. So they'll skip iPhone 19 and go straight to iPhone 20 for that. And then after that, Apple will introduce supposedly a clamshell foldable. And by this time, so let's say we get to 2029, the whole iPhone lineup is going to look so different with so many weird, interesting options and also considerably higher price points as well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll all be used to spending a lot more on iPhones by then. They'll be coming out at different times of year to what we're used to now. And the form factors available will also be dramatically different. They'll actually make the iPhone Air look pretty boring by then. So I think by the end of the decade, this really won't matter because you could have an iPhone lineup that looks like a book-style foldable iPhone at the top end, and then a clamshell foldable, and then probably an entry-level model.
Right.
And the industry norm will move toward foldables. And as those get thinner and more durable, and as there is no perceivable crease, I think non-foldable iPhones gradually will phase out. And the iPhone Air will have just been that device that helped us get to that stage.
Listen, I'm excited to see the future as usual. I was a little harsh on the waterfall displays. I'm sure it'll look wonderful, but if there is no like way to circumvent the fact that when you touch it, you're holding screen and you're going to be, there just has to be a way to figure out how to make that not happen. But that I just remember when a lot of Android phones had like the Edge before this Edge, it was Samsung's Edge that had the spillover screen, the curved like displays, a lot of those phones had that, and it was horrible to hold in hand. So it just was not the best. But would love to hear from everybody as usual. Come on out, all of you iPhone Air users. You showed up big on my video yesterday. Let's see if there's more of you and explain why you love it and maybe what phone you came from before. I'm guessing a lot of you had minis, according to the comment section that I've already seen. So yeah, let us know everything, and we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.